How are we doing, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Talking to Mod. Now, today's episode is very special indeed because today is our 30th episode of Talking to Mod. Yes, 30. I want to thank every listener who's been with us. If you're new, welcome. If you've been here from the beginning, thank you so much. It really does mean a lot. And I want to thank all the guests we've had as well. Now, today's guest is a very, very funny man indeed. Well, it's his job. He's a comedian. Not only that, he's a bit of a fashion icon and he loves his music. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Talking to Mod with Tom Ward.
Oh, here he is. Go on, son.
Good evening.
How are you, mate? All well?
I'm all right. I've had a fringe trim.
That, listen, you're doing bits with that, mate. Go on. Yeah right, man. Did you do it yourself?
That's straight in there. Yeah, straight in there.
First impressions are everything, eh?
I went to a swanky hairdresser, and he recognised me from Facebook. So I'm killing it, man. I'm killing it.
Hey, listen, that's levels, mate. When you walk in there and they charge you double.
Yeah.
But how are you though, mate? Good to see you. It's been a while. I think it was Shine On, wasn't it? A couple of years ago when we first met before your set. Funny. In the evening of that night, some woman went up to me and went, I thought you were fucking hilarious. Your set was amazing. I was like, oh, thank you very much. Did you like it? What trick was your favourite and that? And she was like, oh, no. I thought you were that comedian. I was like, oh, shit. Well, you know, thanks.
Yeah.
But so first of all,
I had a lot of people coming up to me and saying, oh, your magic shit.
I see what you're doing there, trying to get me back because of the fringe, yeah. Innit? Listen, should we start again?
Did your son trim your fringe? Or
did what?
Your son trim your fringe?
No, Stevie Wonder did.
Oh, right.
Come on, mate, come on. I mean, I'm trying to break me in gently. Did you actually, did you know, well, I'll come to that later, but I've actually started doing a little bit of stand-up. Do you know that?
Have you?
Yeah, I started. Because most people, like when they see my act, they go, is it supposed to be funny? And I'm like, no, I think it's more like I'm nervous and it comes across as being funny. Do you know what I mean? Next thing you know, Paul McCaffrey, the comedian, he's got similar air to us, to be honest.
Yeah.
There's three of us. We should do a tribute band. But he said, I was basically asking him for a bit of advice in it. And he said, just give it a go. The Empire in Belfast, they do something called Empire Laughs on a Tuesday. And he put my name forward and I ended up doing it. And it was all right, to be honest. It's totally different. So, like, I don't know how to explain. But, like, for a comedian to be out there, the job is to make people laugh, isn't it? Right? Whereas when I'm out there doing the tricks, if no one laughs at what I'm saying, I've got a trick to fall back on and I know they're going to love it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Listen, I'll take my hat off to you. I couldn't be doing it every night, I tell you. Like it's
did you get a taste for it though when you did the gig? Did you come away going, ooh?
Yeah, 100%. Like I felt it was a weird buzz because like as I said, I threw in a couple of tricks as well, but yeah. It's mainly like stories and that, and people just think, oh, you know, some of your stories are quite funny. So I just went in there and done a few, and the reaction I got was brilliant. And then, yeah, so much so. Kieran Bartlett, who's from Belfast, fantastic comedian. I ended up on his podcast the week after, and then 3 weeks after that, I supported him at the SSE Arena. But it's, do you know what I mean? Like stuff falls into place. Like, I never thought that would happen. Like, you got to get out of your comfort zone every now and then, haven't you?
But definitely.
But it's mate, how did you end up getting into comedy? Let's go with that.
Well, I was rejected by music, wasn't I? I was a singer, and then I got booted out of a band, and then I had a couple of years of trying to get back a new band, which is just, you know what I mean? It's like you know when you've been in a band and the band is good and you've put all your energy into it, the chances of finding another band that are as good as the band you were in I was just hanging out with loads of like DIY producers who were architects or interior designers who had a laptop, do you know what I mean? And doing really bad dance music. And then I just kind of thought, this is it, man. I've got to stop this. The dream is up. So I just started doing open mics and got a taste for it, as you do.
Do you remember your first ever time getting up on a stage doing a bit of comedy?
I remember the general era. It was like 13 years ago and I was just doing open mics. And I don't remember the first gig. I'm pretty sure it would have only lasted about a minute because I kept forgetting everything. I kept panicking and just forgetting my whole set and then just standing there. Do you know what I'm resting this on? You want to see?
Book. I'll get on that.
You see it?
What, the lamp?
Where is it? There it is.
Oh, the award.
Yeah, it's a BAFTA.
Where'd you get that from? eBay?
It's, I'm staying in this, my girlfriend's friend's house.
Yeah.
That is a BAFTA winner. He's a director. He directed Father Ted.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he got a BAFTA for Father Ted and he directed Red Dwarf as well. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Is mental. I only recently, probably the last 6 months, got into Father Ted because my missus, being from Northern Ireland, she's always on about Father Ted this, Father Ted that, and I'm like, I don't know if it's my sort of humour and all that. Watched it, I was hooked on it, mate. Like, I couldn't stop watching it. It's I love all that old stuff, you know, like some of my favourite stuff, like Still Game. Do you watch that?
What is that?
It's on Netflix. It's like a Scottish like comedy, a bit like Fools and Horses, but a Scottish version, right? It is gold, honestly. Like, the stuff they get up to is incredible. I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
But there are some... What else is there? There's... I mean, obviously, you watch Fools and Horses, then.
I've grew up with it, yeah.
Mate, they genius, though, isn't yeah. they? Like, I always say, for me, my favourite character is Trigger. I just think, no matter what scene he's in, he just makes it for me.
Yeah.
There's something about him. His facial expressions, everything.
Yeah. It's pure comedy.
It's gold, man. Did you have any like comedy heroes growing up?
Bobby Davro.
Yeah? The
first one, yeah. When I was little. Brilliant. He was on TV when I was about 7 or 8. And I just loved him. I also like The Face. No, Hannibal Lecter. Not Hannibal Lecter. Hannibal from the A-Team. Sorry, long day. Hannibal Lecter from the A-Team. Hannibal from the A-Team. I thought he was exciting. I thought he was cool. And then like Chevy Chase, Jim Carrey.
Brilliant.
Guy. Yeah.
Some great names there, man. Some great names there. I remembered more so only recently, and I'm sure, like, I was talking to the missus about it. I was saying, do you know what? I'm sure he did something for chewing gum or something like this. I'm going to have to Google search this. And I looked, and it was, because I remember you did an, was it called In Personal Space or something? When you tell me you got a lifetime supply of chewing gum out of that.
Mate, I should have haggled for that, because that's unacceptable. I need it. I didn't. In fact, I didn't get paid enough. They completely exploited me. I was like a young Hollywood actress flashing her for peanuts on a promise of a big movie. And in fact, they accidentally sent me Carl Walker's contract, because I interviewed Carl Walker for that one, and they accidentally sent me his, and he got 40k for an hour just to come and chat with me. And I was like, whoa, okay, all right.
40k to stand in front of you.
In front of me for an hour. And he turned up all sweaty and he was a nice guy. He was just quite anxious about the training, you know, Pep. He was saying, you know, Pep's really, he's just in your head. He's in your head. He's always in your head. And he was just so stressed by the intensity of playing for Man City and having Pep.
What?
About the stress and the pressure. You're still sweating from training.
Oh my God, mate, I tell you what, I'd be doing cartwheels if I was standing in front of you for an hour for 40 grand. I tell you,
Yeah.
like, that is, I can't get me around that. I honestly thought you were going to say something like 5 grand or something like
Yeah. Yeah. But I know all the Man City people came down as well, all the you know, 'cause they're like it's like a machine playing for a
that.
big. So they had a lot of like people there making sure that we were asking the right questions, and he'd been media trained as well, so he was very like, no, you know, obviously, you know, I love my team, and if someone gets injured, then I'm down. If I'm on the bench, I still want the person who's replaced me to play well.
No, absolutely no chance you do. Now, obviously, another thing me and you share in common is our love for music, mate. And I'm sure, I think, didn't you have a Ride t-shirt on when I saw you? I'm sure you
Almost.
Yeah. What was your favourite album growing up?
Probably Joshua Tree. Yeah, I was a U2 fan.
I weren't expecting that.
No,
I weren't expecting
and you like U2.
Say that again.
Look, saying you like U2 is like a dirty secret. It's like saying you like public masturbation or something.
There's nothing wrong with that. Is there?
It's because of people like us. Yeah, make fine, you know, make it.
Listen, social media and cameras everywhere have killed the vibe, mate. It used to be a good, you know.
Yeah, it was you know, it was like footprints in the sand. Once you were done, it was finished. But you know, now everything's recorded. Yeah, no, Joshua Tree probably was my favorite album as a teenager, and then people like I love Tricky. Maxine Quay was a big album for me. Do you ever get into that?
Not really, to be honest. My sort of listen, I was heavily influenced by my mum and dad. So like the first sort of music I listened to was Lonnie Donegan, mate. Like skiffle. I think it was late 50s, and it influenced me so much that I ended up calling my boy Lonnie.
Wow.
Yeah. So and then after that, see, a lot of people, as soon as they see this haircut, they go, fuck me, that's Wonderwall all over. And it's like, he's definitely an Oasis fan. When in reality, Oasis are probably in my top 10. Of course they are, brilliant. But I've got like your Kinks, the Who, the Small Faces, obviously the Jam, the Clash, you know, Bad Manners. I just, if it's good, I listen to it. You know what I
Bad man,
mean?
let's not get mentioned enough.
Mate, my partner, she her brother absolutely loved Bad Manners. Sadly, he passed away a long time ago, and she always wanted to go and see him, right? So I was like, Bad Manners, this is not a, anyway. So he was playing in the Limelight too in Belfast, so I took her to it, and it's the first time she's seen him live, and he was absolutely incredible. Like, I've seen him multiple times, and I actually did a show. He was on the same lineup once. I can't think, it was some mod festival, and I met him for the first time, and he was just an absolute character. Like, this was because he had some serious problems, health problems, so he had to stay off the sauce and all that for a while. But mate, he was caning it when I met him. Like, I couldn't keep up with the fella, I tell
Yeah.
you. But he was lovely, lovely fella, and what a great gig. Have you seen them play a few times?
Oh no.
Mate, honestly, you have to jump on that. They are, it's gold. Now, he's a bit like, his knees are really bad now. So you imagine he's a big fella, and then he's trimmed down a bit, but he's sort of getting on a bit. And he obviously, the last song they finish on, the Can Can, he used to be able to lift his legs up and all that, but he can hardly do it now. And it's just like, you know, when you see like a relative or getting old, someone you really loved, and you're like, oh shit, this is heartbreaking. It felt like that at the end of the gig. You're like watching him trying to do stuff he used to do, and you're like, oh. But
Yeah.
listen, it was a great night. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I know what you mean. The fading powers is oof. It's painful, isn't it? You just don't want to see it. You're like, no. You're a god. You never fade. You never
100.
by the stuff that we do. That's what you want to believe of your heroes.
Big time, mate. Big time. And I'm right in saying you're Brian Jonestown Massacre. You're a big fan of them as well, aren't you?
Really? No, I dabble here and there, but I'm not a big fan of theirs.
So I was going to say that the tambourine player Joel, he's brung out a book, and I'm not a big book lover, to be honest with you. I mean, magic books are probably as the closest thing to reading as I get, really, because I just switch off so easily if I'm not hooked straight away. But I've been reading this book, and it's, mate, it is insane. Have you seen Dig, the documentary?
Yeah.
This is mental, mate, honestly. Like, it's a whole different ball game. Like, some bands think they're like rock and roll and all that. You read this, it's the stuff they got up to, and that is incredible. And I mean, it's all in that documentary anyway, but
what a savage documentary, isn't it? It makes the Dandy Warhols look so wet. Like, especially the lead singer. He just comes across like a vampire, doesn't he? Just sucking blood out of anything. Just turns into a kind of neat little, you know.
It's mental. It is absolutely mental.
There must be so many of those guys out there in the music industry who are like genius, who just basically don't have what it takes to hold it together. To get it done, to get the album done, or to play the game enough, even for a little while, to get household recognition. And then band comes along and basically goes, oh, that's cool. I'm going to do that. And they have the ambition, and their lead singer isn't a total nut job. So, that, you know, he doesn't kick them all out of the band every week. They can hold it
together. Yeah, it all kicked off last year, didn't it, towards the end. Did you see that over in, I think it was Australia, and they all started fighting on the stage again? It's mental. Like, that was, I think that was the last show. They were supposed to have done a few more shows, but they had to cancel them because it's Ryan, the guitar player, and Anton just ended up having a scrap on the stage. And it's heartbreaking to see, because like I was very lucky. I went on tour with them, that band, and like the chemistry they've got is, it is like a big family. And, you know, they took me under their wing. I was on the bus with them, and it was one big family for 3 weeks. And then when you see them having a fight, it's like, shit, come on. Do you know what I mean? But it's, mate, what a band.
Yeah.
What a band.
Yeah. Was that quite weird for you then, being up close with them? Like, do you get quite that thing when you meet people that you admire and you're just like, you can't stop thinking about the fact that it's them? You're like, were able to relax after a while, or?
I'll be honest with you, like, yes, definitely, because I sort of trained myself too, because I think, right, you're here to do a job. If you act like a super fan, I mean, Jesus Christ, when I met Paul Weller and then ended up doing tours, like did 3 nights with him, if I ended up thinking about the young kid in his room, shuffling his cards, listening to Setting Suns, followed by The Gift, there's no way I would have been able to hold it down. But, you know, you have to be there. End of the day, you're there because they love what you do. And I sort of learned to think, well, we're all the same at the end of the day, but I've got the utmost respect. I mean, listen, for starters, Paul Weller knows how much of a big fan I am of his, because I've told him. But then you have to just sort of take a step back and go, well, listen, this is life. And life's an amazing thing. But when I met Anton for the first time, it was from the BJM, it was quite a weird moment, because like he ended up following me on Twitter, followed each other, and then he messaged me one day and just said, right, I want you on a tour, can I give you a quick phone call next week or something? So I went, yeah, sure. So he called me and he's basically like, this is the start date, this is the end date, can you make it? And I was like, all right, shit. So I got back to him, yeah, I could make it. And that was it, basically. And then when I met him, it was like as if I met him before. It was, he made me feel really at home. He was basically like, just chuck your shit there, that's your bunk, I'm off there to do my set and we'll talk later, you know, like this. And it was like, fuck, you know, not like, it was just a surreal moment. But then I remember, as like you just said, you take a moment to think, shit, I'm in the presence of greatness here. Like, this guy, some of the tunes he has made. And there's moments I had with him that I would as a kid or as a music lover, you would love, you would dream, it's the stuff of dreams to be sitting next to him, him telling me, like, he can play something ridiculous, like over 100 odd instruments. I didn't even know there was that many instruments in the world, right? But he's just a multi-talented musician, right? And then next thing you know, he just gets his laptop and he's like, listen to this, presses play and just looks at you as if to see, like, look at me, like, listen to this, just to see my reaction. And I'm like, fuck me, this is brilliant. He's like, yeah, but what do you really think? I'm like, no, it's really good. Yeah, but if I weren't in front of you, what do you think? I was like, no, it's good. It's good. I don't know what to say. What do you want me to say? It's shit.
Yeah, it's terrible. If I wasn't, if you weren't here, this is the worst music I've ever heard.
If you
there, the context of you there, knowing you that made it, absolutely.
Listen, I'm not saying it's bad, but if you were playing this in my back garden, I'd have to shut the curtains as well.
Yeah.
It was mental, man. But I mean, yourself as well. I mean, some of the places you've played and all that, and the people you've been around, it must be incredible, man.
Yeah. It's quite surreal at times. It's quite surreal. Like when I did Apollo, it was like I was standing backstage waiting to go on. And I was just, I became really aware that I was behind the screen. You know, you've only ever watched it from one side.
Yeah.
I've only watched it from watching the comedian with the bulbs and all that stuff behind them, and then suddenly you're behind the screen and you see the smoke machine being, you know, turned on, all the mechanics of it, and the bloke pulling the rope to make the screen go up, and then there's some bloke sweating up in the light booth with the stroke, you know, following you around, and it's all just like, whoa, that's a weird experience when it's suddenly you're in the thing that you watch. It's like, what? This is strange.
That is mental, though, isn't it? I mean, that is what a place as well. Like, what a venue to play. And of course, I mean, everyone knows the Apollo. You know,
yeah,
mental, man. And that's would you say that's one of your proudest moments in your career?
Definitely, it was an amazing gig, but probably the best gig I've ever had. I just had it. It was like an out-of-body experience. It was like a dream, you know, when you dream about playing football when you're a kid. Or you dream of, you know, do you still have those dreams where you're really fast in your dream and you can just run and run and run? You're like, whoa, look at me. I'm really fit and fast and my limbs all work amazingly.
And then you wake up.
And then you wake up and then, yeah, your hip hurts from just sleeping.
Oh, that's another thing, man. Like, my legs were aching after getting up the stairs to get into this room to do it. Like, I was like, what is going on, mate? Like, I used to run up a set of stairs, and now, you know, I mean, I'm no spring chicken, I know that, but 34, I'd like to think I'm not going to start deteriorating that quickly. But fuck, it's not like I play football anymore. I don't really do much sport.
It might be wastage from lack of exercise.
Probably is, but I started it in the gym, man. Listen, do you go to it? Is a gym a thing you do or anything? Do you go hit a gym?
And a bit of yoga here and there.
See, I wanted to get into, like, getting into a bit of yoga and that, but it's apparently it's really, like, I did a little bit of meditation and all that because I just, something I like to zone out now and then. So I did a few meditation classes and that, and then I thought, fuck this, and just started hitting the gym. But you get some fucking weirdos in the gym, don't you, these days? It's like extra small tops on a large body, and they're staring you out. Are you using that? Well, obviously, because I'm fucking sitting down using it. Do you know why you're asking me? You know, wait till I'm gone. But it's mental these days. And get on this, right? I have to share this. Obviously, these days, everything's revolving around social media and TikTokers and influencers. There was this couple in there with two tripod stands filming their own exercises. And I was like, is that the world we live at now? Like, I've got a big pet hate of going to a gig and people filming. Do you know what I mean?
What, in the crowd?
In the crowd. Like, for instance, Liam and John Squires have been going around doing their little tour. I feel like I've been there because every time I click on Twitter, everything's up there. Do you know what I mean? Someone's been there and they filmed everything. It's mental, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit gross. It's not my job.
How would you feel if someone like I'll take it you've had people at gigs before filming you like with a camera, like how?
I mean, I always tell them not to, but at the end of the day, it's just going to end up on their Instagram. Do you know what I mean? Or Snapchat. Well, I don't know what, I don't know where it goes. They share it with their mate. I don't think I'm really under threat from it. Do you know what I mean? It's not like squat. I mean, to be, most of the time it's just going to be in their phone, but I don't like it. I don't like it. People taking out their cameras. I don't like it at gigs when you go and watch music and people are filming. I'm just like, come on.
That's exactly.
Put it away.
That's exactly where I stand on it, mate. I can't stand it. Can you imagine if there was an Oasis reunion? Like yeah. All it'd be is just people with phones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They'd have to do a phone ban, I reckon. She can do when you do it.
I think Jack White used to do it at his shows. He put like you put the phone in a sleeve and then they magnetic shut.
Yeah,
but that's got to be done, mate.
Do that for Oasis, and they'd have to try and ban cocaine in the radius of the gig because it was fucking shit. Can you imagine an Oasis reunion gig? It would be just horrible, be so gross, like the amount of coked up blokes think that they're the biggest character in their fucking cul-de-sac. They come up and start like chatting shit to you and pouring beer on you, spitting in your face just from talking. Oh man.
Sounds a bit like the crowd at Shine On, doesn't it?
To be fair, when I arrived at Shine On, I was judging it. I was judging it hard, but actually by the end of the weekend, I was like, no, they're all right. No, that
did you?
Aging indie is not a good look, is it? I'm in the tail end of my youth myself, you know, so it's only a matter of time before I start to look like a desperate man clinging to 1995. But
did you catch many acts at Shine
On? I saw the House of Love. That was, for me, the big one, because I love the House of Love. And yeah, I mentioned it on stage, actually, because there was just a lot of blokes in front of me farting.
Oh, yes. Yes, you opened, that was one of you earlier.
Yeah, I just talking.
Started it.
It wasn't really a joke, just.
You started just off talking about
it. I meant farting at the House of Love and trying to enjoy the gig. Cokie Lagerfarts, German author.
It was good though. It's a good little festival. Like some of the bands they had there and that were brilliant. Yeah, man, I had to see him. It was good because, again, social media can be a wonderful thing. It can be a blessing and a curse at the same time. He's sort of followed the stuff I've done for a long time, and it's amazing because I absolutely love his music. So that was the first time I met him, and I said to him, I've got to show you a trick, innit, mate? Do you mind if I film it? And he was like, oh, absolutely, mate, absolutely. And I do a thing called Magic Mod Monday, put a trick out every Monday, have done for the last five years, sorry. And if it's good to have him on it, you know, it's just a trick, as I said, nothing special, but it's just a nice moment. And then I saw Dermo from Northside. He was good. He was on the night before, or the Saturday, and then our shows were on the Sunday, and he was on at like 1 a.m, and I thought there was absolutely no chance that I'm going to stay up and watch that. But I ended up watching it. It was probably one of the best gigs I saw at the weekend.
Yeah, I love that thing of stumbling into something. I went to see the Wonder Stuff singer. What's his name? The Wonder Stuff. The guy from the Wonder Stuff.
Oh, Yeah.
And it was great. It was unreal. He was unreal. Like, he had the crowd in the palm of his hand. And I was like, well, you could just see how hard it is to keep it together as a star. Like, when you meet an actual star, you realize you kind of ignore, partly because you know that it's so hard to stay relevant and stay in the limelight and keep a career going at a high level without a band going to shit or a mental health crisis that destroys it, or do you know what I mean?
100%.
So many like great acts who have just kind of faded away, partly because they wanted to, they got disillusioned or fed up. But just when you see someone and go, oh my god, you're a god, he's a god, that guy. He's like, the way he you know, he was a big festival. They were a big festival band, weren't they, in the 90s?
I know what you're saying. It is, as you said, it is so hard. You know, you have got to stay relevant, but at the same time, you got to sort of try and stay true to your roots, isn't
it? Yeah. And is that line between chasing the fame, but also doing the thing you want to do? You know, following that through and not giving up on that. And that's where a band like Brian Jonestown, you know, they're kind of purists. He's a purist, isn't he, at all costs.
100% is
all that kind of thing of like, no, we don't sell out. In fact, if we even start getting successful, we'll fuck it up deliberately because we're not that kind of band. We're not a success band. You know, it's almost like anti-success.
It's, no, 100%, man, 100%. I've got a question I want to ask you, actually. It's, when you're doing your stand-up, Tom, and you get someone, say, heckle you,
yeah,
right? Do you sort of have a load of comebacks already done, right, in the back of your mind? Have you got so many that you're like, right, this is the perfect one there? Or do you just sort of go with the moment?
Generally, I'll go with the moment. Mm. I think it's better. It's more exciting. Sometimes I'll say something I've said before, but ideally not. I don't know. It's better to be in the moment. A bit cheap, isn't it? Reeling out. But that's what those classic comedians do, the one, you know, those old school blokes we grew up watching, like Des O'Connor and Bob Monkhouse. Those guys just had a memory, like a library in their head of, oh, here's the line for that occasion, here's a joke for that occasion. And that's fine, that works. But obviously, it just is more exciting and more, you feel more risky if you're just dealing with it.
100%. Have you ever had a moment where you're on the stage and you sort of wish that you weren't, you wish you were anywhere else apart from on this stage, and it's gone, like, I wouldn't say tits up, but it's sort of, do you know what I mean, hasn't gone to plan? How did you get out of that situation?
I've had that many times. It's a horrible feeling. Have you had that?
I did, yes. So I did a show in Belfast, actually, on the 12th of July, right, which is, it depends what side you're on in Belfast. Obviously, it's split up with Catholics and Protestants, not to get too political because someone will end up getting the wrong idea, but it's the 12th of July, obviously, one side, it's their big party, and bloke said, would you do a little set? I thought, oh, no sweat, mate, 100%. I got there, and it was like... It was like, oh my God. Like, it was like 2 o'clock I got on, right? And they were absolutely steaming, right? I got on the stage and there's this strobe light going off. There's smoke. The fucking disco lights are still going on. And I'm like, listen, John, are you going to turn them off or what? Like, I'm trying to do a set here. Right, where's the microphone? Geezer just hands me a microphone. And I'm like, right, where's the stand? He's like, oh, we ain't got no stand. I'm like, so I've got... I'll stand here, try and do a trick and hold a microphone. All right, brilliant. So anyway, I've got this geezer up on stage. Now, I couldn't have picked up the crowd. Now, the crowd, quite a few people there. Out of all this, I've picked up this geezer who was absolutely off his net. Nut. He had third degree Gerns. He was gone, mate. His jaw was all over the place. And I'm thinking, you like that? I'm thinking like, oh, fuck me. And I'm doing a trick with him. He's like, fucking love magic, me, mate. Fucking love magic. I said, well, if you fuck up, mate, you'd enjoy this trick. Just let me do it. And he's like, fucking brilliant, mate. Oh, this is brilliant. I said, I ain't even done anything yet. He's like, well, I just know it's going to be sensational like this. And I'm like, it was fucking brutal. Then I did the trick, right? And I said to him, just hold the microphone there. Just hold it. Make yourself useful. So I was making him hold it as a stand. As I've turned my head, right, to get this stuff off this table, he's followed me with the microphone. I didn't know. As I've turned round, he's fucking bashed me right on the tooth, and I started bleeding. I'm like, are you taking the fucking piss here? Or what? I can't believe this is going on. But as a professional, you try not to go, oh shit, I've just been hit in the face with a mic. What's happening? And stop. So I carried on.
I had like a sort of like dripping down like Carrie.
Well, it's just a shame there was no one there taking photos, because it would have looked very rock and roll.
Yeah.
But no, it's so I carried on, and then I've got this fantastic trick to shut people up, right? And it's two handkerchiefs. You tie them up, you put the handkerchiefs down their top, and when you pull it apart, there's a bra on it, right? And I thought, well, I'll fucking get you, mate. I'll get you.
The end of it and stuff it in their face. Is that what you do?
What's that bit?
You set fire to the end of it and then push it into their mouth. Is that the last bit?
I've only done it once, and that's probably why I'm not on the TV anymore.
Yeah.
But it's a long story, man. Court case and everything. But that, for me, is probably the worst. Like, everything went wrong. Do you know what I mean? But, I mean, how about for you? How did you... I mean, you just got to roll with it, haven't you? At the end of the day, you're there. You've just got to go and...
You've got to roll with it. You've got to take your time. It's a lonely feeling, though, when you feel like the venue itself isn't helping you. People running the gig don't really know about how to run a gig. That's a horrible feeling. You need to feel like at least the gig itself is set up for what you're going to do. Otherwise, and the worst part is, if you have a gig where the actual gig itself is just impossible to play and you don't do well, and then the management are like, yeah, that wasn't great, was it? It's like, well, what do you want me to do, man? It's like trying to play beautiful football on mud. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, I've had many gigs like that, trust me. I've had many. Corporates usually, where I've been brought on, and then the MC has forgotten that there's comedy and said, right, go and have a drink. And everyone's getting up. He says, oh, no, we've got a comedian now. Get everyone back down there. And then I'm just coming on and playing to investment bankers or whatever. I did a gig where everyone was all coked up. It was a Christmas party and everyone was standing up in a foyer. And I had to try and do comedy, and they were all just talking. And I had about six people in the front smiling and trying to support. But you could barely hear me. And then I just walked off after 5 minutes and just handed the mic to the guy. I was like, mate, I'm not playing this.
There are, you know, sometimes, as you said, you've got to know, for starters, you know your worth. You know, you're not going to go out there just because they're paying you to be there and then end up putting on a shit show. If it ain't right for you, you should never go and do it. And I've had a few like that where it's nothing to do with my tricks and that. I'm already prepared, but some of the venues, for instance, this I always go back to this one. On tour with the Libertines, and we played whole arena, I think, where they play ice hockey in there, right? Supposed to have a big screen in the background. Screen weren't there for this show, right? And this is a fucking massive venue, right? Even worse than that, I put my props. I have my props in a like a little paper bag. Like what an alcoholic would put his fucking Buckfast in or something and drink on a Sunday morning, you know, like something like that. I'd have all my props in there, because I end up doing a gag with the bag at the end. But I had it all in there, stuck it on the steps, and thought, how long have I got? 10 minutes, right, I'm going to quickly go to the toilet. Went to the toilet, I come back, and I was like, right, where's my props? Like, looking around, thinking someone's on a wind-up here, they've moved them for a laugh, right? So Carl was standing there watching his missus, his band was on at the time, and I said, Cole, like, wait, do you see my props, mate? Thinking he's nicked him. He went, no. And then looking around, I said to the security guy, mate, have you seen, was there a bag there and all that? Yeah, oh yeah, there was a bag. Cleaners just come around, they throw it in that bin over there. I went, what? So I'm fucking, he's like, Ben, you're literally on. I'm like, shit. And all I had was a deck of cards. So I've gone on, there's no screen, all my props have ended up in the bin, which I ended up getting out after, and I'm there going, all right, can you see at the back? No, should have got here fucking earlier then. So I'm trying to do these tricks, and it was brutal. And I always go back to that moment, because it's like, I just wanted to be anywhere else but there, mate.
It's hard enough anyway doing a gig, isn't it? Winning a crowd round with all your tricks and all your props and everything in place, but let alone being stripped and taken away.
Yeah, that was
I can't. You're blunting me here.
I generally had like tears in my eyes when I got off that stage because, like, not be, I went like, you know, I wouldn't cry my eyes out. But I was like, oh, fuck that, I'll fuck that one up.
Yeah.
But the beauty of it was, like, depending on how I look at it, that was like the second night of the tour. And we did 8 or 9 shows. That was the second one. So I knew that I just had to step it up a next level after that because I had to be prepared. Now I sort of have 2 sets. In case one don't work, then I go on to another one and work on that one. So, you know, again, the crowd plays a major part. If you go out there and they're all up for it, as soon as you walk out there, you know, this is going to be easy. Like the Albion Rooms, they do a lot of comedy nights. You've been there a few times?
I've been down there, yeah.
Beautiful, lovely, run by great people as well. The staff are always so helpful. And went in there, I didn't even have to do anything. The crowd were up for it. And I thought, this is going to be easy. Do you know what I mean?
In better than a crowd that immediately, it's almost like they're ready, they're primed for you. We like you.
There was one geezer there though, and all he was absolutely off his nut. I seem to attract them sort of people at my gigs. I don't really, anyway, it just seems to happen. But
we're really mad for it. Oh, this, love it. It's any sort of chaos, hell raising, madness, he'll love it.
two people in the crowd though generally didn't have a fucking clue who I was, which, listen, no one, you know, it doesn't bother me if people don't know who you are. You've got to try and win them over. But I said, what were you expecting? And their honest words were, we thought you were a stripper.
Wow.
Because Magic Mod, I said, well, you thought the Magic Mod was like a cheap version of Magic Mike or something. Do you know what I mean? And they were like, I was like, so you've watched about an hour of the show so far. When did you think I was going to start taking my clothes off? Do you know? Like,
yeah, the fuck? Low production.
But it,
drop, when you drop those beautifully pressed trousers and that Gabici jumper comes off and the slip-ons with the tassels around your head, it's worth the hour wait.
Have you been looking through my blinds again? Listen, mate, before I let you go, what have you got coming up? I know you do a podcast yourself, and yeah. I believe you're doing a couple of live shows with it.
A live show on the 9th of April in London, yeah. Bad Boys Done Good, the podcast. Yeah. It's a piss take, basically. There's not a genuine conversation. It's just, it's a piss take. So me and my mate Joe is Tony Soprano.
Brilliant.
Works to people.
Brilliant, man. I wish you all the best with it. It's a bit like this, though. I mean, this is an absolute... People come on here and expect me to start asking all sorts of questions, right? And I'm like, it's just a chilled out chat with people. I've got a lot of... Like, I enjoy their work and that. And it seems to be all right. I mean, obviously... When we pull it out on the Spotify, the numbers we've been hitting are pretty cool, man. But I'm one of these people, like, for instance, the Specials. I had Horace, the bass player, on here, right? I am a massive Specials fan. And he's followed me. And I thought, I'm going to try and sort of see if he'll come on this. He come on, and I'm having a chat with him, but making a podcast. Like, do you know what I mean?
That's a good way to have a chat. I want to get Jerry Dammers on.
Oh, what a character.
Jerry's the guy, man. Jerry. He didn't get his teeth fixed. did what happened to you, probably. His teeth got smashed out by a drunk bloke. And then he just went, you know what? This is my thing. Not having teeth. And he could afford to have his teeth done.
About 10 times over.
Specials money. He's even got his spatial AKA money. His Nelson Mandela concert, which you probably skimmed off. You could skim off a couple of grand from that back in the...
Fuck.
Come on, Jerry.
Come on, son.
I have a lot of ghost life with no front teeth. Written Ghost Town.
Oh, mate. What an anthem.
Yeah, think of all the people with teeth who will never get anywhere near doing anything as good as that.
What a band, mate. What a band. Which Neville Staples still going around doing a bit, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
That is... Huh?
See him around. I see him on stuff. turns up here and there. He's unmistakable.
He's mate. That band. They're in my top 10 specials.
Did you ever get into the special, AKA the album after?
The album after. Yeah, I mean, listen, I love all of it. You know, I liked. There's a. I'm trying to think of my favourite song. Skinhead Moonstomp, when they did that, and then they went into like, they did about three songs in one. Do you know what I mean? And they went up, they started Skinhead Moonstomp, then they played the Liquidator, and then they ended on, oh, I can't think, but mate, there's a video of it online actually, right? And Terry Hall's just saying, just everyone, just jump on the stage, I don't care. And there's people trying to pull him off. He's like, fucking leave them. They're all coming on. And you've got all these youngsters, skinheads on there just skanking. And it's, mate, incredible. Like, imagine that at a gig now. People trying to get someone on the stage. Just wouldn't happen. They'd be too busy with their phones out.
True.
But
I think there's a question coming, mate. I think there's going to be a backlash to the phones. I think that coming back, that era will come back, because this, the next generation, I know we're wrapping up and it's getting different, but this AI and all this tech stuff is going to explode and people are going to go, do you know what, let's get back to basics.
Hopefully.
I hope so. I think it's coming.
I just want to say thank you very much for joining me, and as I said, it's just been a load of bollocks really from both of us, but that's how I like it, mate.
You're a gentleman, great host.
You dropped out then.
I said you're a great host, you heard.
I did. I genuinely didn't. I honestly didn't. Thank you very much, mate. Honestly, really nice to have you on. Cracking bloke, really funny guy, mate. I enjoyed seeing your set, and hopefully I get to catch some of your shows when you're in and around, mate.
You're always welcome, mate.
Appreciate that. Welcome. Thank you for your time. I'll see you soon.
All right.
Have a lovely evening. Bye-bye. Take care, mate. Bye-bye.